I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. Today's podcast is sponsored by Birch Benders. Just kidding, guys. But seriously, Birch Benders has toaster waffles and pancakes. We love them here in the Levesque house. Their toaster waffles come in 6 varieties: protein, buttermilk, paleo, homestyle, keto, keto chocolate chip. Basically, they're great for any dietary restriction. And I'm a huge fan because they use better for you ingredients. They have 5 grams of protein and 6 net carbs for 2 toaster waffles. So we're talking about balance here. They all come with protein, fat, and fiber, and their net carbs are low, so you're keeping balance. You can find Birch Benders at Target, Kroger, and Whole Foods. If you give them a try, let me know how it goes. And without further ado, let's get to the show. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Today's guest is Dr. Caroline Leaf. She is a communication pathologist and a cognitive neuroscientist. She has spent the last 30 years researching the mind-brain connection, nature of mental health, and formation of memory. She was one of the first in her field to study how the brain can change with directed mind input, or neuroplasticity. Throughout her years of clinical practice, she has helped hundreds of thousands of people learn how to use their mind to detox and grow their brain to succeed in every area of their life, including school, university, and the workplace. Dr. Leaf's most current research trials test her 5 steps and are proving to reduce depression and anxiety by up to 80%. I think now more than ever, we need the support of managing our mental health. So it's an absolute pleasure to bring Dr. Caroline on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled and excited.
I feel like you are just probably getting pinged left and right based on the state of how everyone's feeling with the pandemic, Black Lives Matter protests, and everything sort of that's been coming up in 2020 for all of us. So I just cannot thank you enough for spending an hour with me, and I'm supporting my community with tools on how to take care of ourselves and take care of our you know, the other communities around us, including our Black friends. So I appreciate you so much.
Absolutely. No, it's a pleasure. And yet it's all the time. Every day I'm doing this all day long because people are desperate for help. And the help that's out there is a little confusing. I'm sure that your listeners and you can agree with that. So hopefully we can demystify some of these things and, you know, look at it from a different angle.
I would love that. So first and foremost, I feel like I am all about getting people positive tools, action steps. And so I kind of want to get directly into the juicy details of what are your five steps? How can we lower and reduce our depression and anxiety right now?
Okay, so in order for people to really understand the five steps, Kelly, it is quite important that they understand what the purpose is. Otherwise, it's just, you know, we can be overloaded with techniques and then not actually use them. And a lot of my research has worked around showing, helping people. Well, a lot of the research shows that we won't use what we don't understand. So I'm definitely going to get into the five steps, but I would recommend if we can just begin with me giving you a little bit of a history of what they are and what they're trying to achieve and what I do. Is that good with you?
I would love that.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so I'm a cognitive neuroscientist and have researched the mind-brain connection for the last 38 years now, and I've done lots of different research. I don't work in a lab, so I don't bring people into unrealistic situations. I go out into the field, and that is, I think, extremely important when it comes to mental health and mind. We've had a very weird way of studying it for the last few years, and for the last sort of 60 years, with the advances of science, it's become a very laboratory, clinical kind of thing, and it's got to the point where human life and experience and sufferings and all the challenges and things have been medicalized and pathologized and sort of brought down to a very neuro-reductionistic kind of philosophy of you are your brain and almost like an avatar walking around with this mechanical brain. And if something goes wrong in the brain, well, that's the reason why you feel sad. You know, and it's very unrealistic. And it's almost like a paradox because we've advanced so much scientifically and medically and technologically, but we've actually gone backwards when it comes to the understanding of mind. And so we've got a massive gap that has developed between, when I say going backwards in terms of mind, we haven't applied the research in mind enough in terms of how we function as humans. So there's a massive gap between the advance of knowledge and then the management of knowledge, or the advance of sort of knowledge in the world and then the mind management of that. So I work around mind management. I've studied mind, the mind-brain connection. What are thoughts? What is the science of thoughts? What does that actually mean? How's the mind different to the brain? All these kinds of things and the impact of these things on how we function mentally and physically. And for example, like in your world with wellness and excess of diet and eating healthy and just general wellness and so on, what has mind got to do with that? And so that's kind of a big picture. So out of all of that research, I started my work with people with traumatic brain injuries and dementias and traumas and learning disabilities. And this is way back in the 80s when the brain was not considered changeable. So at that stage, now today, everyone's heard about neuroplasticity, which means the brain can change. Neuro means brain and plastic means to change. And so we're all kind of familiar with that now, and everyone talks about that and that sort of thing. But unfortunately, in the 80s, they didn't believe that the brain could change. So we were trained to teach our patients to compensate, which meant that, okay, we'll accept your problems. Your brain can't change. Your brain's broken. Just kind of teach people to compensate, which is a very hopeless view. So I decided that I didn't like that view and didn't seem to go along with what science was actually saying. So I got involved in neuroplasticity research, and out of that, working with patients in the field. And I want to stress in the field. So I'd work with people in their school environments, in their work environments, corporate, whatever it was that they were doing. I would work with them in those environments and find out what's blocking you? What's your communication issue? What's the problem that you're having? And how can we change your thinking? And how can we change this so that you can function on an emotional, social, cognitive level? So I say all that to say that that gave me a tremendous amount of experience and research because I worked with across different cultures, across different socioeconomic stratas. I worked in the apartheid South Africa, apartheid being legalized racism, absolutely evil system. So I was working against that in South Africa, and I worked in the transition period when Mandela came into power, and then also post-apartheid when you saw all the impact of it. And I saw firsthand the impact of racism on people's mental health, education, learning, wellness, you name it. And it was a shocking, terrible reality. But that's where I spent 2 days a week for 25 years learning from people that have been through the worst situations and just about the resilience of the human mind. Parallel to that, I ran a private practice where obviously more privileged people that could afford to come to a private practice came. I worked in corporates and schools. And I say all of this to say that the techniques that I've developed come out of a very long history of hands-on working with people in many, many different circumstances with mental health, with learning, with mind, and attempting to understand what mind is and how it's different from the brain and how can we use our minds to actually change our brain. So one word that sums up everything I've done is I've learned about mind management, developed theories, the clinical trials, all that kind of thing, but it's all about mind management. And Kelly, mind is where it all begins. If your mind is not right, nothing else in your life will be right. So you can go to all the wellness courses, to read all the wellness books, do all the self-help stuff, go to all the whatever, church services, motivational. But if you don't actually manage your mind, it's just data. You're just accumulating data and you're not going to make behavioral change. And so I wanted to change that. And that's what my research is focused around that. So the five steps were birthed out of the science of thought, out of all of the stuff I've seen in all the years of research. And I'm constantly doing research to update and make sure that I stay in up to date with all the brain research to understand, well, how do we do mind management? So the five steps is mind management and has been applied in a multitude of different environments. So whether it is dealing with someone who's experienced severe trauma like racism, like rapes, like, you know, terrible abuse, whatever, things that happen from early childhood and even into adulthood. And, you know, you can have involuntary trauma at any stage of your life. So working with people who've gone through this terrible trauma that affects how they function emotionally, intellectually, relationally, and so on. And then also to people that are battling with learning, you know, kids that are battling and adults with learning disabilities and people that are battling with all kinds of just managing just, you know, the really severe stuff to the stuff that's just the day-to-day stuff. So mind management goes from the toxic traumas to the toxic habits that we establish. So all of us have got toxic habits, like we get into bad habits of maybe overreacting to certain situations or getting irritated too quickly or getting frustrated in traffic or patterns, you know, toxic patterns, habits develop in relationships. And we've all got them. If we're honest with ourselves and we do a little bit of self-regulation, we'll find we have a whole handful of them inside of us that we need to deal with. So I wanted to work on how can we help people with trauma? How can we help people with established toxic habits change them? And also helping people with the day-to-day stuff like acute traumas, like when COVID hit us and we went into quarantine and we still don't know what's going on. And, you know, then the whole huge, finally, the great awareness that's now being, thank goodness, being created around finally, hopefully making some changes in racism, but all the shocks and the traumas that have been happening in the community and how our world has changed. And you know, you just life. I mean, you can just be sitting at home and you get a phone call and someone in your family just died or whatever. How do you deal with your mind with all of that stuff? All the way through to how do you get yourself eating the right kind of way, which is what you teach people so incredibly well. How do you get your mind in that space where they listen to you, Kelly, and they actually apply that, et cetera, et cetera. So in other words, everything I teach, the five steps, is like a delivery system for, if I can use the five steps to listen to the knowledge you give in order to apply that in my life, use the five steps to learn how to learn to eat correctly, to exercise correctly, to sleep correctly, to manage those toxic habits, to manage those toxic traumas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that's a big picture. I don't know if you want to ask me some questions and then I can dive into a little bit of an overview of what it involves and then give you some of the clinical research and what it's doing in your brain, what's happening in your brain. And
There are so many questions that are coming to the surface for me based on just the vast differences in what people are dealing with. Obviously, a traumatic trauma like rape, abuse, or racism is and can so be ingrained in you in such a deep way that it may feel like you can never get over it, or you know, a toxic habit that may just be something you keep doing that's killing your confidence and your ability to think you can manage other things in your life because you can't get your food right or can't get your exercise right. They're so drastically different. So I don't want to bucket them in the same space. I really want to, maybe what we can do is unpack what some of the research says around like a really toxic trauma, because I think that's really important for people, especially right now, to really understand what's going on in the brain when someone goes through a toxic trauma and how the five steps can be applied. And then we can get into toxic habits. Maybe that's eating and behavioral habits and things that aren't, I don't want to say aren't as serious, but they just aren't as serious. So let's do the tough stuff first.
Okay. So essentially what we, as humans, we are experiencing life all the time. We're in life. And it's our, and the way when we talk about experiencing life, you open your eyes in the morning and it begins. And it doesn't actually stop when you go to sleep, because whatever you experience during the day, you're processing at night. And so at nighttime, you are going through a kind of housekeeping in your brain and in your mind. So all of this experience of life is being processed through our mind. So the first thing in understanding these five steps clearly is to understand, and understanding sort of the heavy stuff like the traumas, is to understand what the mind is and what the brain is. And in today's narrative, mind and brain are very often seen as the same thing. Most people think the mind is the brain, but it's not. They are completely and utterly separate and totally different, and have different characteristics and therefore need different a different way of looking at them. And it's very freeing when you realize this, because if you think the mind is the brain, and that's not even good science, it's not even in the science, it's really bad science, and it's none of this, even the scientific studies that say you are your brain and your brain produces your mind, which is very much today's narrative. If you look at the research that they've done to make those statements, they're not what they've researched. They're not actually saying what they've researched. So let me explain it simplistically. Your mind is separate from your brain. Your mind is not your brain. You are not your brain. You control your brain. So your mind is separate but inseparable from your brain. Your mind works through your brain, and your brain responds to your mind. So your brain is part of your physical, the physical that we can see, made of cells, made of substance. Our brain and our body collectively are made of 75 to 100 trillion cells. So that's a lot of cells. So your brain and body, 75 to 100 trillion cells, which each, all those cells then group into the brain and the heart and the lungs and the kidney and all the different systems. But that's 1% of who you are as a human. It's the physical. And we understand that through the laws of classical physics and biology and so on. That understanding of the physical is classified under what we would call the biomedical model, which is what's used in medicine very effectively, very advanced. We've advanced tremendously in that field, where we have many different ways of diagnosing and treating, identifying, naming and treating, like diabetes and heart disease and autoimmune issues, et cetera, et cetera. So the biomedical model is designed for that physical 1%. Works brilliantly and is constantly advancing. So what's the 99%? The 99% is your mind. And your mind is, in the most simplest definition, it is your ability to think and feel and choose. The mind can be described using the science of quantum physics. And quantum physics works hand in hand with classical physics, kind of like two sides of a coin. And in order to understand us, we need both. So we need classical physics to understand what we can see, the brain, the body, the cells, all that stuff, the heart. And we need quantum physics to understand what we can't see. But you can't, they're not separate from each other. They're just two ways of looking at the whole of humanity and the world, etc. And quantum physics is considered the most accurate and fundamental of sciences. And it helps us to understand mind because it deals with things that we can't see. So particles and waves and gravitational fields and all this fancy stuff, vibrations. And so it's a rare, it's quantum physics is considered to be the science of thought. It is a theory of thought. And it is basically explaining that a human's ability to think and feel and choose is pretty much the most important thing in the universe. Because as we think, feel, and choose, we create. And what do we create? The first thing we create as we think, feel, and choose are thoughts. physical structures inside of our brain. So we literally, with our mind, with our thinking, feeling, and choosing in response to experiences of life, we churn that, like literally like churning butter. We literally make something out of that. We think, feel, choose, and we create this energy that moves through the brain. That's why the mind needs the brain needs the mind. And we push this energy through the brain. Think of like a fire moving through, you know, visualize maybe a brain. Everyone knows what a brain looks like, and visualize maybe this a lot of light moving through it. That's what it looks like in the technology that I use for my neuroscientific research. So visualize like light waves moving through a brain. Okay. And that means that the light waves are your thinking, feeling, and choosing in response to life. And then your brain is a responder, very, very complex responder, but it's responding to your thinking, feeling, and choosing. And it responds electrically, electrochemically with neurotransmitters and electrical impulses and all these quantum energy fields and all these different genetic reactions. Genes get switched on and amino acids get made and a whole bunch of biochemistry happens. So in other words, our thinking and feeling and choosing is driving our physical. It's driving the response of the brain, and then the brain controls the body. And that is kind of, in summary, the mind-brain connection, which means that whatever you're thinking is impacting and driving how you're functioning. So if your mind is a mess, your brain, you're going to build a mess in your brain. And your brain's not wired for messiness. It's wired for love. It's wired for organization, not chaos. So therefore, when we have chaos, our brain reacts. We still build this physical structure out of proteins. They look like trees. Thoughts look like trees. And those thoughts then give the instruction to the rest of the biochemistry of the body to function. So every cell then follows the direction of those thoughts. And this is happening at speeds of 10 to the 27, which is faster than, more than 400 billion actions per second on an unconscious level. So it's very, very fast. We're consciously aware of this process around about every 10 seconds. So our conscious mind, we're consciously aware of our thinking, like you at the moment, as people are listening, they're consciously aware of what they're hearing, maybe what they're feeling, how they're sitting, their hand movements, maybe they're seeing themselves in the mirror or they're looking at someone and they can see. In other words, that ability to self-regulate, that self-awareness, the response that they're having to what they're hearing now, that's the conscious mind. And it's much, much, much slower than the non-conscious mind. But that's all being driven 24/7 by this incredible processing that is happening. So our brain and body are constantly responding to what we are living in, our nurturing, our environment, our exposure. So, I mean, just now you can draw the conclusion. We're immersed in a toxic bath of toxic media about politics and about, you know, the racist issue. And, you know, there's a lot of good and bad in both. Obviously, you know, there's a tendency for media, as we know, to focus on the toxic versus the good stuff. So you almost have to look for the good stuff. You have to kind of dig for the good stuff amongst the bad stuff. But our brain will merge with whatever we focus on. Whatever you're thinking about the most will grow. So that means if you are, whatever your attention is being drawn to, that's what you think and feel and choose about. That's the light you push through your brain. The brain then responds on all these levels, and the end result is genetic expression, and you grow thoughts. Thoughts look like trees. So you are right now, as you're listening to me, my words are sound waves, electromagnetic sound waves. And you are thinking, feeling, and choosing, sending the light through your brain, which is quantum energy. Your brain's responding electrically, chemically, neurotransmitters, biochemistry, blah, 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 and genetically, and you're growing thought trees. At this point, you've grown at least... you've grown one thought tree, which is this podcast, because a thought tree is a concept. So like you have a tree. Think of a tree. That's a thought. A tree's got lots of branches. So the thought is the tree. It's an oak tree, or it's a fir tree, or it's a pine tree, or whatever. But the branches represent the memories of the tree, of the thought. Okay. So inside every thought, you've got memories. And you can have hundreds, thousands, millions of memories. And you keep adding and keep changing and keep updating. Nothing ever stays the same as you get new experiences. So think of the tree and is the thought, and think of all the branches and the leaves as the information and emotions inside that thought. So thoughts are very expansive and they keep growing, and they're also connected to each other. Think of the root system of trees. Think of the redwood trees in San Francisco. That's a really good example, because they're very well known for the root system, where the root system is very expansive, and the root system, it's almost difficult to separate which root system belongs to which tree, because there's so much connection. That's what it's like in your brain. The root systems of your thoughts all connect to each other. And this is why one thought with all its memories will trigger another thought with its memories. And this is how we have so much going on in our heads. And then we immersed in all this information out there. So we've got all this new information coming in. And I mean, you've kind of, when you hear it like this, you think, how on earth am I even functioning? But we're brilliant. We are able to, a large extent, we are managing this pretty well on a basic level to keep us functioning day to day. But what we don't manage very well is the more executive type functioning, which is, okay, so here I'm reading a newspaper article, there's this new, you open your news media feed and there's like 10 highlights or whatever, or 7 highlights or 5, and all of them, most of them will be negative. And you click on each one and you read them, and now you've taken in a lot of extra information that's related to the current COVID crisis, the current, another issue about racism, another issue maybe about DACA, maybe whatever, this, all this stuff. And then you read a bit more and you read a bit more, because each article has multiple versions of it. So you can read the HuffPost and CNN version. And so you can just go down this track of gaining data. But if you don't take time to stop and process the data, if you just bombard yourself with the data, that data creates a lot of chaos in your brain. So at some point, you need to gather awareness. And this is step one, okay? You need to gather awareness of, what am I going to focus on? There's 7 articles here. I'll select through, I'll scan through, maybe open each one and decide, okay, I'm going to choose this one to focus on. And then you choose this one to focus on, and then you read that. Become very aware of your selection, be very aware of directing the process. So instead of chaotically just going through this and then just moving on to the next thing in your day, and that's unsettled information that's kind of swirling around your head, and now you move, and that is actually going to be very unsettling. So your next moment becomes quite confusing, and then now maybe that's lunch. So now you haven't quite processed, so now you don't think about what you're eating, and you're trying to do your Kelly's good plan of eating, and now you are, but you're not thinking properly because you've got all the stuff going through your head. So you just grab something that's junk food, mad modern American diet stuff, and now you mess up, you add fuel to the fire, because now you've added more stimulation to your brain. Whatever you think about changes your brain, whatever you eat changes your brain. So now you've mindlessly grabbed bad food and you're eating this fast while agitated from the news. And that means that your nutritional efficiencies drop by 80%. And so you're eating toxic food with a toxic mind, and your digestive system's been affected. So the gut-brain interaction, gut-brain relationship gets affected, your colon's affected. Now you've got a sore stomach and you're getting bloating. So besides the fact that modern American diet food is causing a problem with the serotonin in your gut and increasing certain peptides that will go through your brain and potentially set you up for dementias. And now you've got this toxic thought, and now you have a phone call from someone and they make you mad. So now you're mad about that. Then you read something that a politician's done, and now someone calls you and you get an email, and then your kids scream and so on. And by this stage, you are such a mental mess that you've actually got damage in your brain and your body. And that's where mind management comes in. Mind management is, how do I get through a day? How do I get through dealing with this stuff? And on top of that, we come back to what you said in the beginning that you'd like to discuss, which is, what about the trauma? What about the fact that this current crisis has triggered a trauma of maybe a financial trauma that you went through as a child, and you remember your parents losing their business and they had no money, and then you suffered for days and you had to sell your house and you had nothing, and there was a whole bunch of stuff. So now you're in this current COVID crisis and you've lost your job. So, and on top of all these other things, that's triggered this trauma from the past, where you had maybe years of, maybe your dad ended up committing suicide or something. I mean, I'm just going very traumatic because I want people to understand that. And you never quite process that. So you've got this toxic trauma, and that's now coming up into your mind as you're dealing with your day-to-day stuff on top of everything else I've just described. And that toxic trauma from the past, which is very established because it's been there maybe for 20 years, comes up as that thought tree. And in the thought tree, there's all the information of the detail of what happened and all those things, and then how you felt, the emotions and the physical and all that stuff. So you're dealing with that on top of this other crisis. Can you see what I'm saying? That this can put us into a state where our body is battling, because whatever you do with your mind, which is driven by those thoughts, is then influencing what you eat in the next moment, as I described. what about your sleep tonight? Sleep regression begins in the morning. So now it's now the afternoon and you've gone through this chaos. Now you get into the evening and you're trying to get ready for bed and you've got a bunch of other stuff that's happening. And some good stuff happening between. You had a great conversation with someone. You had a lovely dinner with your husband. Your kids did something really wonderful. So you had some really high points during the day as well, which really helped. The high points will definitely calm down your brain sufficiently for you to be able to function fairly normally. But then you kind of suppress it for a while. You go to sleep, or you think you go to sleep, and you don't really sleep properly. You've battled to fall asleep, or you fall asleep and wake up often, or you kind of have this erratic sleep where you don't get enough non-REM sleep. You wake up the next day, and then the morning you wake up, your mind's chaotic. Start with, oh no, negative thoughts, etc. And now you've got too much what we call delta activity in the brain, which should, you need it, but it should drop down quite a bit as you wake up, but it's too high because you haven't dealt with the toxic thought. You haven't dealt with the things of yesterday and last week and so on and so on. So I've painted this whole picture of what is maybe an extreme situation, but mind management can help you bring order to that process. And mind management is not a quick fix solution. It's not a trick. It is not just meditation. It is not just dealing with lifestyle. It is a complete reframing of how you approach life. It is a delivery system for saying, okay, I need to manage my mind to manage the toxic trauma and get that under control, to manage how I'm going to deal with the day-to-day stuff, to manage how I'm going to deal with these things. It doesn't mean it's all going to magically go away, but we need to drive how we manage it. We can't control the events, but we can control our reactions. Mind management helps you control your reactions in slowly working through, okay, that toxic trauma of the past, getting it reconceptualized, getting a mind management plan in place for the acute traumas that happen during the day, getting, and so on and so on and so on. So mind management's the overarching managing of your mind. And it is pretty much a five-step process that can be applied for all those different things. But obviously it's applied, it's a concept that I'm going to describe now. And then it's applied very specifically with each. And I've written about this in my books. I've got lots of books. And we've just released, well, it's not just, we've had an app out for about a year now, which is constantly getting upgraded. And it's based on my most recent clinical trials. So it's the most recent version of it's been out for about 6 months based on my most recent clinical trials, and it's called Switch. So I'm just saying this up front now, and we can obviously give you the information for your show notes. But the app is called Switch, and it's on Google and iTunes. And that has got my most recent version of these five steps and to be able to help you to actually understand how to manage your mind. And in this app, not only do I have the full version of how to detox your brain, how to detox those traumas with using the five steps, but we're building in all kinds of extra content for how to manage the acute and the day-to-day five-step hacks and how to help your kids and blah, blah, blah. So once you're part of the community, you can actually access this all the time. So I just say that to say people are thinking, oh, there's so much information. What do we do? There are tools, and I have, as you know, podcasts, social media, right, all the normal platforms, web page, social medias. We unpack a lot of the concepts that I teach into very simple sound bites. Okay, yeah. So before I launch into, I've painted the picture now, launch into using, you know, what the five steps are in principle, and I'll give little basic examples of the trauma plus the day-to-day stuff of the story that I've built.
What you're explaining really feels like a really reactive way to go about your day, where you're just allowing the information and the actions and the grabbing of the food and, you know, what emails coming, whatever it is, you're just allowing the day to sort of come at you without being strategic about what you're allowing into your sphere, almost, especially with the news. If that's the way you're starting your day, I can't imagine kind of dealing with the delta activity of the day before and then going into that negativity, because the news is always really negative. We want to be informed, but we want to be strategic, it sounds like, about what we're absorbing, what we're reading, and then what we're deciding to focus on, which sounds like a really proactive way to go about your day if you want to be informed without kind of holding on to the negativity and allowing it to spiral you out of control.
Beautiful. You summarized that excellently. And that's exactly what this is. We are able to strategically and proactively, to use the words that you have used, manage our reactions. You cannot control, I say this all the time, you cannot control the events and circumstances of your life. You cannot control what's going to happen out there. You cannot control what's happened and why in the past, and you cannot control why people do what they do. People are, you know, crazy. We're all a little crazy. They all do things to each other, and some people just do really bad stuff, and that we can't control, but we can control our reactions. But our reactions need to be not shoot from the hip reactions. It needs, we need to be much more proactive. And one of the main reasons is that the way that you are reacting is mind action. So when we talk about reaction, we're talking about how I think, feel, and choose in that moment. So reaction is a mind, is the consequence of mind action. Mind and action is thinking, feeling, choosing. Remember, mind is how you think, feel, choose. Brain is the physical substrate that your thinking, feeling, and choosing moves through. And then you build the thought in your brain, and the thought is what you'll say and what you'll do. And the thought also influences bodily function. So everything you say and do has come from a thought, and the thought came from how you reacted or how you self, the thought felt and chose in response to that moment. So we need to are strategic. We're being strategic about what we build in our brain, because what we build in our brain is going to produce what we say and do, and it's going to affect the physical functioning of our brain and our body. So we need to think and feel and choose in a much more proactive and strategic way in everything from the time we wake up. And then we look at the science and see, okay, is this possible? It sounds so difficult. But this is actually the design of human nature. This, we see this from neuroscience, that just in terms of how the functionality of the brain works, we can do this every 10 seconds, which means 6 times a minute. We are designed to be very consciously aware of our thinking, feeling, and choosing, the thoughts coming up, how we're reacting, people's reactions to us, how to sort of temper our reaction and our in that moment, etc. So that's the good news. The good news is that is our neuroscientific design. The thing is that we're not trained in that sufficiently. We should be training this right from kindergarten, and it should be a life skill. This is a life skill that is very untrained. It's a life skill that's also been trained out of us over the last 30 to 60 years. So as we've advanced with technology and medicine, which are fantastic, this is what I said in the beginning, we've advanced technologically, we've advanced with knowledge, but we haven't advanced with how to manage within that advance of knowledge. So we have, that is why we see such increases in depression and anxiety. That is why, one of the reasons, okay? One of the reasons why we've seen a lot more burnout, a lot more stress, etc. And why we're seeing a huge wellness movement that is saying, okay, we've got to control our lives. You've got to change our lifestyle. The wellness movement that you and I are both in are saying, change your lifestyle. But what are they saying? It's saying, change what you eat, change your exercise, change your diet, and control your stress. So mind has been lumped in as a separate little thing at the end of controlling stress. And then when you ask people how to control stress, they tell you to breathe and meditate and be mindful. That's just not enough. So all the things that I've described are relevant. We've got to control what we eat. I've written books on this, like you have. You have to control what you eat, because your brain isn't fed properly, your body, you can't function properly. You have to sleep. You have to exercise. I mean, these are all logical things, and we know there's tremendous information out there. We do have to control our stress, but mindfulness and meditation are only the preparation. You have to go beyond that. Mind management is adding on to that. So in all my programs, I teach on, yes, you've got to prepare your brain through meditation, through breathing, through these various different ways you can prepare your brain. Meditation, there's many different types, as you know, and breathing, there's many different types, different ways. And there's things like you can focus on gratitude, etc. So there's always a preparation phase. And that's very important, that you prepare your brain in terms of, and then you go beyond the preparation. You go beyond just being mindfully aware into active mind management. And that is where these 5 steps come in. That's where the strategicness of this comes in. This is where the preparation, the being proactive comes in. Not, you know, that you don't get reactive. You want to be proactive and not reactive. You know, this is vitally important that we get ourselves into that process. Okay. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
I say all this to say, when I explain these 5 steps, they sound so absolutely simple, but actually they're based on such a lot of heavy science. So all the stuff that I've been saying, you can literally encapsulate into these 5 steps. And the five steps of mind management basically involve your ability to become aware, to self-regulate, the ability to reflect deeply. But I'm not just talking about sort of thinking. I'm talking about deep reflection, the ability to actually take the time to capture that what you have reflected on. And generally, this is through a written form, but sometimes you don't have time to write because you're in the moment. So there's a way of controlling your genetic expression, which writing does, journaling and all that stuff, but also through just repeating sentences in a certain way in your head. So your third step is this writing phase, writing physically or writing genetically. And then you have your fourth phase, which is the strategic rechecking. A proactive, what have I written down? What have I just reflected on? And then there's an active reach, which is a simple action that you do during the course of a day to keep you focused, to keep whatever that you're working on in conscious, your conscious space. Because unless something's conscious, you can't change it. So those five steps are embrace the principles of embracing, processing and reconceptualizing. So you've got to embrace something. You've got to embrace the trauma. You've got to embrace the self-regulation concept. You've got to embrace how you are reacting. You've got to embrace the depression. You've got to embrace the anxiety. You can't change what you haven't embraced. Embracing means I bring it into my conscious mind. On a neuroscientific level, we know that when we deliberately and consciously embrace something, what we are doing is we are weakening it. So awareness, embracing, gathering awareness, this first step, weakens the physical structure that you have built in your brain. Because with your mind, you've built matter in your brain, as I've been describing. With your mind, you've changed your brain. So essentially with your mind, you are changing your brain, and embracing weakens it. So when we start to weaken things, we actually are strengthening stuff. I mean, when you're weakening stuff, you actually are changing stuff. If you're not embracing it, and you're suppressing stuff and you're not dealing with it and you just keep going on reactively, you are not going to change your brain. You're just going to make it worse. Or you change your brain in the wrong direction. So it's not like nothing ever happens. Neuroplasticity happens whether you like it or not. It's just the direction of the neuroplasticity is what you determine. And these five steps help you determine that. So when you're aware, you can be aware of when you embrace and get to that state of deep awareness. Embracing really means to take a hold of. You are saying, okay, I'm aware that I'm really worked up now. I'm aware that I'm really like not managing all this stuff. I'm aware that I'm actually being really triggered by these situations. I'm also aware that I'm really happy about this new business idea. And I'm really aware that I'm so happy about how my kids did this beautiful painting for me today or how, whatever. Okay. So it's an embracing of the moment, which comes out of the preparation of the brain, but it's deeper. The preparation of the brain gets you mindful and in that state where you can actually embrace. Embracing means I'm actually prepared to do the work of change. Embracing means I'm going to move forward into processing. And from processing, I'm going to move even more forward into reconceptualizing, which is redesigning how I approach something. So it's essentially a process. It's essentially a completely different mindset change, where we are not just being being blown by the winds or in a ship in the sea, just being tossed around by the waves, but you're actually driving the direction you want to go in. It's called directed neuroplasticity. And it's honestly a skill that develops and that you can learn to do. It's what, when you feel stuck, it means that you're not driving your neuroplasticity. When you've got those thoughts that you're ruminating on and getting stuck on, you're not driving your neuroplasticity. You're letting it drive you. You're just getting blown by the winds. So the only way you can is to get control of the boat. And awareness is get control of the boat. And that means hard stuff. Embrace is one of the hardest things to do because you've got to embrace the pain. You've got to actually admit the issues because it's in the midst of the, and we're all saying this now, you hear everyone say this, but the science is behind that. When you go into this admitting stage where you are actually able to look in the face of pain, look in the face of depression, look in the face of anxiety, look in the face of frustration. When you do that, it's so hard. It's so scary that most people will say, oh, I can't do this, and will shove it down. And that's the danger. As soon as you shove it down, you cause brain damage. It's going back even worse than before. But if you can look in the face, you will find that you actually have wisdom in the depths of your unconscious mind that will help you to process through this. You have your, you know what you can handle and what you can't handle. And so when you embrace pain, you don't stay in it all day long. It's very limited. And you'll see my programs and just based on clinical, as I said, clinical and clinical application and a lot of clinical research over such a long time, is you limit the time you spend working on really heavy stuff. So that heavy toxic stuff we spoke about earlier on, the abuse and the rapes and the really hard stuff that you're going through, you know, suicide traumas and whatever, death and those really bullying, hard things. You're not going to stay in that awareness of that all day. You're going to limit that to a 7 to 15 minute to 30 minute max a day. And you'll see that in my app and in my books. When it comes to the day-to-day stuff, just living through the day, listening to the news, dealing with acute stuff, there you just quickly do cycling through the 5 steps constantly on an ongoing basis. Okay, so it's 2 levels that you're working on all the time with this embrace. But when you embrace, you start to change. So related to embracing, I said the words depression, anxiety. You read out in my bio as we started the podcast that when you embrace and process, you actually are going to be reducing. When you, my clinical trials have shown that you can actually control anxiety and depression and so on by 80%. That is enormous. Even if you control it by 10%, you'll feel like a different person. So very quickly, what does that mean? That you've reduced or controlled anxiety by 80%. It means that when you manage your mind, when you manage your reaction, which means when you manage your thinking, feeling, and choosing through embracing, processing, and reconceptualizing, which is what the 5 steps are teaching you to do, you are learning to control the effect of those situations of life on how you're functioning by an 80% factor, which means that you're still going to cry, shout, scream, swear, whatever it is, but it's going to be very different. It's not going to be hopeless. It's going to be, okay, I've got this. Oh, I'm irritated. I've got this. I know what to do. I can get myself back under control again. And that is power. That is so powerful because it means that you're not just going to be flying from one thing to the next. You're actually going to be controlling that. And that's a skill that we can learn to do. And when you see and look inside the brain, and we look inside the body and the biochemistry, it's unbelievable. When people, I'll just give you one example from our most recent clinical trial. Our experimental subjects were, and the control subjects were tested, they basically got evaluated at multiple time points over a 6 month period. And the time points are very significant for the amount of time that it takes to drive neuroplastic change to form a habit. So, it takes 63 days to form a habit, not 21, which is just a myth that we see in the literature and the media and so on. So these subjects were tested on a psychological level. We heard their narrative, which is their story. So this is very contextual. We didn't just test them. They actually told us what was going on in their life, which is so important. So they were seen as an individual with a story, with a context. And we looked at all kinds of blood measures. We looked at their DNA. Their genetics. We looked at they're also inside their brain at the different energy in the way that the different frequencies flow through the brain and so on. So we looked at a lot of different measures. We call them psychological, neurophysiological, and physiological. Then we tested them at day 1, 14, 20, 7, 14, 21, 63. Now, this is a lot of information. And again, it's 6 months. So the point that I'm making is at each test point, we created a lot of preparation in the brain. We created a lot of awareness in the person's mind, awareness of how they're feeling and how they're reacting and how they're coping and all the stuff I've been saying. We test that psychologically, and then we looked at what was happening in the brain and the body at each of those stages. With the control group, they didn't get any mind management. They just got awareness. With the experimental group, they got the awareness, plus they got mind management. They got the 5 steps in the form of the app. What we found with the subjects and found tons of stuff, but I'm just going to give you some basic stuff.
Right.
With the subjects that were in the experimental group, when they managed their mind, when they applied these 5 steps daily for 15 to 30 minutes to deal with the toxic trauma, they controlled the feelings of depression and anxiety by 80%. Their homocysteine levels, which is indicative of inflammation in the body, very simple explanation. If homocysteine is too high, for example, you're at risk for dementia, neurological problems, heart issues, all kinds of autoimmune issues. Our subjects at the beginning of the study were very dangerously high, a lot of them homocysteine levels. Within 21 days of mind management, the homocysteine levels had normalized. By day 63, they had stabilized. By 6 months later, they had improved dramatically and were being sustained. The subjects in the control group who didn't get mind management had the opposite. It got worse and worse and worse. So with awareness, but without mind management, they got worse and worse. Their cortisol levels went through the roof. We all know cortisol affects your immune system and affects all kinds of things. The wrong levels of cortisol are bad for you, and the good levels of cortisol keep you alive. So we found that the control group got bad levels of cortisol, and the experimental group got good levels of cortisol. The DNA, we saw telomeres. Telomeres are the little caps on the end of chromosomes. So think of Jurassic Park, the DNA ladder, and then think of a chromosome, which looks like a little X wearing socks. And those little socks, the significance of those socks is that every moment you are building new cells in your brain. 810,000 cells every second. So if your mind is chaotic, like that picture I described earlier on, your telomeres are going to be too short. And if they're too short, your cells are going to age and become very vulnerable to disease. And every system in your body is vulnerable to whatever. And that you're going to, your biological age is older than your chronological age. We found with our subjects in the control group, they already started at the wrong levels. They already were very not in a good place with everything, especially the telomeres. And they got worse. Our subjects in that significantly worse, as with awareness without mind management. The opposite happened with the experimental group. They actually were getting biologically younger. Their cells were getting healthier. So the last thing I want to say about that is in the brain, we saw massive changes in the brain, the energy frequencies in the brain, the way that the front part of the brain spoke to the back part of the brain, spoke to the middle part of the brain, the areas of the brain that are involved in that respond when you are highly anxious, et cetera, et cetera. We found those stabilizing dramatically in the experimental group versus the control group. So that last thing I want to say about that is that we have to look at depression and anxiety and OCD and schizophrenia, et cetera, very, very differently. We've got to stop seeing them as illnesses like cancer and like diabetes, because they're not. It's not even scientific. It's never been proven. It's been theory that's been disproven. Depression, anxiety, frustration, irritation, stuck in your thoughts like OCD, schizophrenia, which are psychotic breaks, hearing voices, it's very extreme ends of the coin. But these are all very normal reactions to the events and circumstances of life. If you've been raped repeatedly, having a psychotic break is very understandable under the circumstances. It doesn't mean that you have a brain disease. It means that you have had a trauma. So to give you a brain disease label and give you medication to numb it isn't healing the problem. What would heal the problem is to hear your story and help you manage it. See this thing that I'm saying? So what, and this is what we saw with our patients, what I've seen with my patients for years. And the narrative today is that if you are feeling depressed, you're told you have an it, you have an illness. Depression's not an it. Depression is a warning signal. It is something that anxiety, depression, these are warning signals, emotional warning signals that are telling you a story. And what's vital is for you to listen to them, to embrace them, to process them and reconceptualize them in order to find the cause of the story so that you can unwire that toxic thought and rewire it. Doesn't mean suppress it. You've gone through it. It's part of your story, but you need to know how to take the sting out of that pain. And the only way you can do is to embrace through the pain, process through it, and it takes time. It's going to take at least maybe 1, 2, 3 cycles of 63 days to rewire a toxic trauma inside the brain, but it can be done. And you can completely reverse the damage that's happened in the brain and the body by doing that.
I think when we think about telomere lengths and blood testing homocysteine levels and cortisol levels, we think that that is driven, you know, it's just coming into understanding that that are for, I think, the main population, that our thoughts can have such an effect on, you know, our mind can have such an effect on our brain that then has an effect on our biology. And now we're being able to prove that through
exactly
science research like yours, which then again takes this and goes, well, how do we work it backwards? Like anyone in functional medicine practitioner that I would work with wouldn't say, oh, you have an estrogen problem. Here is bioidentical hormones. They may go back and see if there's a DHEA problem.
Exactly.
Or, you know, they're going deeper and deeper and deeper. And you're taking this to a whole new level from, you know, the what is happening in our physical body back to our thoughts and those trees that you were talking about and how those trees and root systems are connected all the way back to, you know, what are our thoughts? And I think that is so powerful because when we are a victim of racism or trauma like rape or, you know, or we're just ruminating on something over and over and over again, but never really bringing that into the conscious mind and embracing it. How are we ever going to heal ourselves and have a positive effect on our biochemistry?
Exactly, exactly. And what you said so key there is heal ourselves. There's so much we can do. And the narrative for the last 60 years has been moving in the direction of you've got to let the expert fix you. So because mental health has been sucked into the biomedical model, into the 1% physical, and the philosophy has been to apply the laws that work with the biomedical model into the mind, and you can't. And so it's almost the stigma, the whole talking of stigma and stuff has been completely created by that biomedical model, because the biomedical model is outstanding for dealing with the effects on the physical body of mind issues or of disease. Works really well, but it doesn't work. You can't apply those principles of labeling, symptom identification, labeling, diagnosis, and treatment in terms of meds and so on, or fixed sort of level of treatment to someone with mind issues. And it's got to the point where people, I ask the question, why do you have to have your mind issue validated with the disease label? Because that disease label actually, the research shows and life story shows and the millions of survivors of this terrible mental health narrative will tell you is that it follows them onto the insurance. People see them as crazy. They're seen as something's wrong with them. Doctors lose their jobs if they get that label. People are seen as, you know, so we've got to acknowledge mental health, but not as a disease, because acknowledging it as a disease makes it worse. And my question, biggest question is, if the body is 1%, why do we need a 1% philosophy for the 99%? I don't know if that makes sense, but your mind is 99% of who you are. So depression is a mind thing. It's a 99% thing. Why is it not already an overarching point of importance? Why do I have to go to the 1% physical philosophy to get it validated? So what I'm saying to you is your depression is real. It's a valid thing. You don't need a label to tell you are feeling depressed. You know you're feeling depressed. But that is not a disease. That is a signal. So embrace it and make it work for you. That's the beauty. You can, anxiety, depression, this is really crazy what I'm going to say now, Kelly. But it's, if you grasp this, it'll shift your perspective and your listeners. Depression, anxiety, OCD, frustration, all these things, angst, etc., hovering anxiety, all these names are emotional warning signals that are designed to work for you and not against you, depending on how you view them. So if you view depression as an illness that is a neuropsychiatric brain disease, which is basically how it's labeled, that's so scary sounding, it'll already give you a heart attack and make you feel hopeless and like you've got no control. Or you can see that as, hey, I feel depressed. This is an emotional warning signal. I'm going to celebrate and embrace it. I'm not celebrating the depression. I'm celebrating the fact that I'm aware of the depression, because the depression is telling me something. It's information. It's a message. And if I listen to the depression and embrace it as hard as it's going to be, with the support of loved ones and family and friends and therapy, and if you want to do it, using something like this mind management that I'm talking about, I can then find the thought behind it, the thought tree. And then if I get the thought tree, I can find the informational and emotional memories in the thought tree. And then I can find my thinking, feeling, and choosing that caused that, and I can find the origin. And in that way, I can unwire this thing, remove the toxic thing, reconceptualize, take the blame, guilt, shame, whatever it is out of that, and say, hey, at my core, I'm this amazing person. I am not depression. I feel depression because I am not depression. I have behaviors that are manifesting as depression type behaviors because of, so it's, there's a huge difference from saying I am to I feel because of, and that gives you autonomy and control. And I show that in my research study, that this is a total pathway to empowerment. When you realize your power, you get autonomy. Autonomy means control. Control leads to awareness. And then as soon as you've got that cycle going, you can control toxic thinking, toxic stress, and you improve well-being. And that I have shown as a statistical pathway, statistically significant, which means scientifically it's statistically significant, that when you do that, that's going to happen. Wow. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And I think I would love, because I feel like all of you, I feel like your five steps is backed by so much research. So I don't want to dumb it down or simplify it, but I would love an example. Because if I caught everything correctly, it was to become aware, reflect deeply, capture your thoughts, either writing them down or I'm sure using a tool in your app, rechecking and reaching. Can you give me one example with like a simple example of how you would use those five steps and when they would happen like in your day?
Well, you would use them in two ways. The first way is actually three ways. The first way is to deal with acute toxic established stuff. So that's toxic traumas that have been on for a long time and toxic habits. So those are two different exercises. And essentially what you would do is you would work on those daily for 7 to 15 minutes a day, and then you leave it alone. So you don't stay in the toxic mode all day long because it's too overwhelming. So you stay in that mode for 7 to 16 minutes, and the app guides you exactly. The first time you work through it, it'll take you probably 30, 35 minutes because you're getting used to the system. But once you get a hang of it, you can do it in about 7 to 15 minutes. And that's dealing with a toxic habit or a toxic trauma. Then the other way you apply it is if the acute stuff. So you're going along happily and you get that phone call and someone's sick or had an accident or you've lost your job. It's the stuff that's out the blue, the stuff that blindsides you. Mm-hmm. And that can completely throw you. And so then you're doing it in the moment. Where the toxic habits and toxic trauma, you're doing daily, five steps every day for 7 to 16 minutes for 63 days. The first 21 days, you pretty much rewire the toxic thought into a healthy thought. And the balance of the 42 days, you are turning that into a habit. And so the hard work comes in the first 3 weeks. And the second 6 weeks is very quick. It's just a few minutes every day of just making sure that you carry that through. The acute stuff, you use the five steps quickly in a cycle and then to manage the moment. So you get the phone call, yeah, I'm away. I can feel that emotion of fear rising. I can feel the adrenaline rushing through my body. I can feel I feel immobilized, completely going into that frozen panic. I'm just one of the examples. So maybe you just heard someone's just had a car accident and they're on the way to hospital and you've got to get to the hospital. And so you're aware of that, and the five step comes in as you hear that news, you tune into that physical and emotional response. You do it almost clinically, almost as though you are distancing yourself from the situation. And the reason I say that is because it's such a shock that we can immobilize ourselves and not make the right decisions and react incorrectly and freak out and make the wrong decisions and have a car accident or self get into the hospital or say the wrong thing. So we have to calm ourselves down to the point where we can actually function. It doesn't mean you're not going to cry. It doesn't mean you're not going to shout, swear, whatever it is that you're going to do. But it just means that you've got a handle on your physiology so that you can have clarity of thought and that your mind can then access the wisdom of your mind, because your mind has wisdom, which is because you want a clear head in an acute situation. So it's an awareness where you immediately focus on how am I feeling physically, how am I feeling emotionally, what are they? And so it's that, and then you are reflecting on those. Why am I, so quick reflection, this happens really quick. Why am I feeling this? And the logical answer is because I'm in shock. You know, it's almost like you're talking to someone else, and you can, if you've got time, you could write down how you feel, or you could just in your mind repeat a sentence to yourself. Okay, I'm feeling like this because of this. And all of this is giving your brain time to calm down. Then you would say, okay, well, what do I need to do to manage the situation? I need to call this one, this one, this one. So you start rechecking and getting into action mode. The first three steps have helped you to think clearly. Otherwise, you've got chemical chaos in your brain, neurochemical chaos. And when you've got neurochemical chaos in your brain, you've got it in your body. Your HPA axis and stress are working against you. Your blood flows less in your brain, oxygen less in your brain. You won't think clearly. So by using the five steps, you reverse that. You get more blood flow, more oxygen, chemicals under control. So by the time you get to the fourth step, which is rechecking, and the fifth step, which is an action, you have a better clarity and a better sense of peace, and you'll start making better decisions. And you can do that repeatedly. Use those five steps repeatedly as you go through the situation.
That's great. That's wonderful. Well, I definitely am going to check out your app. And I'm sure everyone listening has trees in their brain that they would like to rewire. Wow. I mean, this has been completely mind expanding and really, really positive, I think, for now, for, you know, what we're all going through today, which is the COVID crisis, Black Lives Matter movement, protests, news, politics. And then on top of that layer on what we're all dealing with personally, based on all of these, our personal life experience and what, and who we're in contact with and how our lives have changed because of it. So I feel like if now is probably the perfect time for everyone to download the app and to get started with some of your work, because if we're able to embrace this and really create change in our brain, it's changing our biochemistry, and that is so powerful. I think the education that you're providing in our ability to really create change in our brain is like priceless. So thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. I'm so glad you understand what I'm trying to say. And you know, your summary is excellent, because it's a lot of information, but I'm trying to get people to shift their mindset and realize we have got more control than what we realize. It doesn't mean the bad stuff's going to go away, but you're going to be much more prepared to handle it. So you'll make better decisions in that process. So for example, the racism now, you know, I'm doing a 21-day challenge with Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child, Beyonce. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that currently at the moment. So it'll be on the IGTV if this is once that's finished. But essentially, we're working on implicit biases in society. So we've all got these implicit biases. So you can use it to do this detox, to detox your mind, to make sure that we get our implicit biases out. For example, that's an example of the 5 steps, how you can use it to do that to change society. So detox your mind to detox society. So the applications are infinite because it's a delivery system. So, and we all need to understand this as a delivery system. Once you get the hang of it, it's mind change, it's life changing.
Oh, so good. Well, Dr. Caroline, where can people follow along? Remind us what the name of the app is. And I can't thank you for this priceless information. And just, you know, as a mom especially, I really want to encourage my son Sebastian and my future son, how to really take control of their mind instead of being reactive, really learn how to create that healthy foundation of awareness, reflection, and making sure that they're, you know, creating, they're editing their life in the right way so that they can manage it correctly. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
My pleasure. We've been teaching kids as young as 3 to do this. So you can, it's early.
I better get on the app now because he's almost 2. So.
Well, by the time he's 3, we'll have the children's version out. So you'll be able to work it through with a toddler. So there you go.
I love it.
They can find me on Dr. Caroline Leaf. Our webpage is Dr. Caroline Leaf. And then obviously I've got all the social media handles, Dr. Caroline Leaf, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, etc. And the app is available at Google and iTunes. It's called Switch. So it's basically switch your brain on. So SWITCH, and all the links they'll find on my webpage too. You can easily access it through my webpage or through my Instagram page.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for giving us the tools to rewire our brain. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.